Whether your beer is in a bottle, can, or glass, kick back and relax. It's Better on Draft.
Welcome, everybody, to the actual episode 338 of the Better on Draft podcast. I got it right this week. My name is Ken. Thank you so much for joining us. I truly appreciate it. We've got a light show as it is the new year. Dry January is upon us. It doesn't look like any of us are participating, so let's see what everybody is drinking. Starting with Rob. Rob, what do you got?
I have Grainworks Bavarian Princess. It's a nice Hefeweizen out of Westchester, Ohio.
And Wendy?
I am drinking a Warped Wing Perroque, I think is how you say it. It is a Belgian black triple brewed with coffee aged in bourbon barrels. I don't think I've ever had a black triple.
I don't think I've ever heard of a black triple.
I had to look it up.
For myself, it has been probably for a couple months straight. Every Thursday after bowling, I go to Speedway and I get two of these nice tall boys for $1.79 each. But once that is finished, I will be getting into the good stuff, which is two cans that I have of Allagash White. Great brewery out of Maine. Obviously, if you've never had Allagash, it is so sad that it's still not here anymore. It used to be here. They used to sell it in Bombers here in Michigan. I remember buying them in Bombers at 7-Eleven. Like, that's how like weird of a time the early 2010s were.
I think I actually bought some in Michigan at a gas station. In fact, just passing through. Actually, I was on the south. I was in northern Indiana and just bumped across the border and happened to see it in a gas station.
Yeah, I wound up hearing from Jack over at Zatuna Liquor, which is one of my original mainstay liquor stores, and I'm like, man, I want it, but I haven't been able to find it. And he was the one that had to break the news to tell me that it no longer gets distributed to Michigan, as they kind of clawed back a lot of their distribution, which is probably smart on them just because there are so many brands in the state now, as well as so many brands entering the state and currently in the state. But he tells me I still don't believe it, but I have to believe him because I don't think he'd lie to me over something so minuscule. But he says that I explained that whenever a beer comes into Michigan, it's so hard to stay on the shelves and stay relevant. Like, they kind of show up and then they disappear, not disappear, but nobody cares anymore. It's hot. It's great. You got it. Now you can get it at any time. And you're like, oh no, whatever. I don't care. But he says that he sells a lot of Toppling Goliath. And I don't think I've seen anyone drink much Toppling Goliath since Toppling Goliath entered the industry or entered Michigan.
But funny, is that because they don't sell it in our area?
Is that true? I never realized that they don't sell it in Washtenaw.
I think Oakland and Macomb County.
Oh, that actually might be the case. I did have they had a barrel aged Toppling Goliath beer that I had at a restaurant in Clinton Township a few months ago, maybe back in November, and I was excited to see it, and the prices weren't too bad. So I'm like, you know what? If I'm going to have one, I might as well have one that's nice and heavy and boozy and sip on it all night, as opposed to, you know, slamming something that's hot, low ABV, easy to drink, crushable, as we call it here.
Yeah, it's usually on the shelf, the liquor store down the road from me, and I will often pick it up as a four pack. It's usually just King or Pseudo Sue or something like that, but you know. Still good
for me. I don't know. My buying habits, I don't want to say have changed since we've started the show eight and a half years ago, but when I want to go out and I buy a beer, like I really buy maybe a half dozen different beers and that's it. Like Bell's Amber is probably one of the more mainstays of beers that I buy. Guinness, I'll typically buy a lot of Guinness. I love Guinness. I don't know about you guys, but that's just like an easy go-to, easy drinking beer. Something that I can always bring a six-pack to a party, and I know like in a four-hour party, I'll easily get through that six-pack and be fine to drive because it's not high ABV either. But yeah, I don't really go out of my way to buy anything new. Is there a new beer? Speaking of 2024, new beers resolution, as we'll call it. Is there a beer that you still go out of your way to make sure you get, or is there a beer that you always get when you're at a grocery store, bar, restaurant that's like your kind of go-to?
There's a few Three Floyds beers that I absolutely love when they show up, and they're I don't know if they're seasonal or cyclical, either one, but they'll show up, they'll be there for a while, and then they go away. But Permanent Funeral is one of them. I love that beer, and I will always pick it up when I see it. Sanitarium, I've mentioned before, at Beer Brewery, released last month. I, at some point, get over there and pick up a bottle. That one's a Belgian quad, and it's delicious. Yeah, there's a couple like that that I'll pick up when I see them.
Well, you even mentioned Three Floyds, and Gumball Ahead was a beer that I love to drink. And now that I can get it in Michigan, or I can even, again, I live in Ypsilanti, so I can drive 30 minutes or so to Toledo and get anything I want that's in Toledo. And I can get Maine Beer Company in Toledo. And I don't really go down there unless I have a reason to go down there. And then I'll usually make a stop. But I'm not buying anything more than a bottle or two, and that's it. Like, it's just weird because now I have access to it. I don't try to get it anymore.
Yeah, I'm in a weird place too, where I had just done the advent calendar, and so I have a lot of leftover beer. So I haven't bought anything for a while.
I bought a lot of beer when I was on my trip. But I have actually ended up going to pick stuff up at the store. Like today, I picked something up for a TikTok that I wanted to do. And then I ended up getting a Dragon's Mead, Final Absolution, because if I'm going to drink this black triple and it doesn't taste the way I want it to, I want to follow it up with something I know I like. So Final Absolution, Dragon's Milk, those are things that would be a go-to for me, that I usually have that around my house, or I'll pick it up if I know I don't have any. I like to buy a lot of different things, though, because I never know what I'm going to be in the mood for. So I don't think I have a specific thing. I do know that if I am at the store and they have Koonin's White Devil, I will buy a 4-pack because I don't know when I'm going to run into it again. So I make sure that I grab that when I see it. Other than that, I think it's just how I feel that day.
What are your two's baseline level for the amount of beer in the household that you typically keep? Like, is there like, I need to have maybe 24 cans of beer. So if I'm under 24, I'm technically out of beer and I have to go get new beer. Like, what's that baseline for you guys with beer at the household where you say, oh, I have this much left, I need to go get more?
There's two levels for me, or there were two levels for me. When my wife was drinking beer with me, then she just likes stouts and dark, chewy, delicious beers like that. So there would have to be at least two bottles of that coming into a weekend, at least two of those in the fridge, probably more. But if it was at two, it would be getting kind of dire. And then my stuff is more, it sounds like Wendy's collection. I want some variety in there. And so on my can shelf, if it's down to four different types of beers in there, then it's time to get some more beers. But the other end of that, when I homebrew, I have 50 beers sitting there usually. So that's a lot of homebrew that I can always, like, it's an emergency beer supply. I've always called it my strategic beer reserve down in the basement.
I don't know what you mean by baseline, so I don't know how to answer that question. I don't wait to buy beer until it's low. So now there have been times where I just don't buy beer. I'm not out and about doing those things, so it does get pretty low. But I have a closet in my basement that I call my cellar. And then I also have a beer fridge in the outside. But it, because it's outside in the wintertime, I don't keep a whole lot of beer in there because it tends to freeze still. So in the summertime, there's usually a lot more beer in my house.
I think for me, having the keg is always nice to have, because it's just kind of like, that's even so, that's usually my baseline. Like, I don't necessarily go out and buy beer unless I see something crazy or it's, you know, my Thursday night special of my blue light. I'm not really buying too much unless it's a beer of opportunity. But even then, like, I've had this Allagash sitting in my house for 2 weeks now, and I haven't touched it. And I still have a 6-pack of Allagash Triple, and I have Bourbon County bottles that I bought. I have Oddside beers from last year, Black Friday, that I haven't drank yet. So I do my best to get through my beer before I try to go buy any more. And then the keg's kind of just the add on, but I don't know. I think as I've gotten older, old man Ken here, as we've learned, I'm probably the oldest person on this show, with some of the mentality that I have. I feel that there's this, I just don't need to have a fridge full of beer anymore. And I used to have a fridge plus full of beer, like a mini fridge plus like a shelf on my fridge. If some of you have seen, and I'll see if I can pull up a photo, like there are photos where I used to have an entire like regular household refrigerator filled with beer. And now it's just like, I'll probably have like 10 to 15 beers around the house and that's it. Like, I don't enjoy shopping anymore. Is that weird? Am I at the end of the life of the craft beer and the craft beer podcast? Like, I enjoy beer, but for me, it's never really been about the beer. It's always been about the people.
Was never fun.
No. Shopping, chasing, dealing with people who overprice everything. Like the place that we go to, Wendy over in Canton, that place would have a beer that would, like, BCBS there on the shelves, like $19.99 for the regular. I'm like, that's too much. There's another one over here.
It's actually low compared to some of them, because most of them, they're charging $23-$24 just for the base one. And then you go to Ohio and it's $13.99.
Yep. Yeah, the chase was never fun, but it was just the people. I always enjoyed meeting new people and talking to people and learning about the beer itself. But the beer itself is just kind of, it's secondary to that for me now. Again, maybe it's just me and my old age.
It's into the winter now, but I do like a lot of evenings either on my back porch or someone else's back porch. And having beer on hand so I don't have to run out and get it before I head over or they head over is just handy to have.
It's not so much the shopping that I don't like, it's the spending the money that I don't like.
Well, that's why you got to get that. You just got to bite the bullet once a week for $1.79, 24 tall boys.
Right. And it used to be like $8.99, $9.99 at most for a 4-pack. And now if you're not getting a 4-pack for less than $14, no matter where you go, which is annoying to me.
On our YouTube, folks, if you're listening via the podcast, of course, you can watch live Friday, 7:15 p.m. Eastern on YouTube, Twitch, Facebook, and even X and Instagram. You could chat with us just like Mega Wink Pub did. And they said, Ken, dude, that's why I brew good beer on hand. And I don't think... Don't take this as I think there's no good beer or no good beer left or all beer is bad. Like, the beer to me in nearly every situation that I think about how much I like beer has always been secondary. It's been, I want to go do this, or I want to go watch the Lions game. The beer is secondary. I want to go have a cigar with friends. The beer, usually whiskey, depending on where I am, is secondary. I want to go to a beer festival. I'm not there to really try 50 beers. I'm there to talk to people and see friends and say hi. And when you reach a certain point within the industry that we have, like if you go to a beer festival, and there's still a lot of fans that go to beer festivals, and you walk up and you know, all the brewers, because you've been to these breweries a handful of times and you've talked to them and you know their story and you know their story from listening to Better on Draft or another Michigan beer podcast. So the beer is almost secondary to the socializing, and it gets to the point where I get to some of these beer festivals, and it'll go like an hour and a half before I have another beer because I'm busy talking to everyone. So I don't think it's a good or bad beer thing. Like, I don't think I'm missing bad or good beer. But for me, it's always just been a part of socializing.
Part of the brewing and knowing you'll have good beer on hand is that when you brew, you have a fair amount of beer from that process. And my last kit that I got, because I go the easy, cheap way. Well, not really cheap, but the easy way. The cheap way would be gathering the ingredients myself and all that. But the kit and everything, I think I spent $60 on the beer ingredients, essentially, for 50 bottles of beer. Like, that's not bad.
No, but because I don't keep that much beer on hand, like when I homebrew and I don't drink as much as I used to or as fast as I do, like that stuff just kind of sits. So I expect come like I have a fantasy football draft that we do every year. We do it in person. We've been doing this specific group of friends for over 20 years. And like, I'm probably going to brew a beer next year for us that we can drink while we do it. So instead of, cause we'll all bring our own beers or RTDs or stuff. And now it's just like, oh, I can just bring beer. Like I can brew a batch. I can have fun doing it. Maybe bring another friend over, and go, as opposed to what we did, last time, which was I had all the extra brewery beers that we didn't drink on the show. And we got a little sloppy, that's for sure. I always forget how to pronounce the name of it, but it's like Petit Madrid or something like that. The little skinny bottle that we got from the brewery. Oh my God, that was so good. But God damn, that was an expensive bottle for sure. I was not worthy to drink that beer, that's for sure. And as Mega Wink says, good beer inspires social life. You know, that's true. That's a lot of people like that little liquid courage to go up and talk to people. But if you've been listening to the show for the past 337 episodes, while it is about craft beer, I do not need beer to get me going to talk. As Wendy shakes her head no. Like, I don't know. I met this guy 6 years ago and he still hasn't shut up. I wanted to talk a little bit more. If you have other comments about this segment, please go. And if not, I'll move on to the next part.
I'm good.
Yep.
So Rob, you did find an article earlier this week regarding not necessarily like predictions about what's going on within the craft beer world, and what you think will change in the future. Why don't you go over some of these trends in 2024 that you think will change the entire market as a whole?
Sure. So I found an article at 750.com, and they have six predictions for the trends to watch for in 2024. And we've kind of talked about this, but we've talked about this a lot just because we're always wondering where the industry is going and what's going on. But some of their predictions, they were paid to make them, seem to align with the things that we've predicted without being paid to make them. So the first one on the list was that taprooms would put a premium on service and hospitality. And what they're saying here is historically, taprooms have not been as incented to be polite or to entertain the beer drinkers or to make allowances for people to bring their families or their pets or, you know, kids even into the brewery, or maybe not. Maybe they're now having to become full service restaurants just kind of to merge everything together or to get people to go there because they're maybe not stopping for a drink before they go on to whatever the next thing is anymore. Maybe now this is their thing. They're one stop. So that's their prediction to see more of that going on this year. And I can think of a couple tap rooms I've been to where they haven't necessarily been super friendly. I would be interested in visiting again to see if they're starting to be friendlier or wanting to talk to me. And I'm not talking about during busy times. I'm talking about times when they really could have talked to me.
I find that the breweries that I visit that aren't friendly are the ones that close. to be honest. If I look back at the time when I was trying to hit every brewery in Michigan, I do have a job, so I could not do that. but they were opening faster than I could get to them. The ones that I found I wasn't real comfortable at or that weren't friendly with me, they were the ones that didn't make it more than a year or two. So I don't really run into a whole lot that aren't friendly anymore. So I find that odd that that was something they put in there.
Yeah. They added in just being more than a tap room too, as part of that improvement. So I agree. There's a lot more friendly tap rooms. And then, as you pointed out, attrition is going to make this a true statement at some point.
I can't even tell you the last time that I had a negative experience at a brewery. I guess I've been lucky. I don't necessarily go to when the most breweries I've been to this year were my vacation breweries. So the breweries that I had up in Dallas, the breweries that I had up in San Antonio. I didn't really have any issues with, you know, people helping, people filling up my beer, refills to go check out, carry out, etc. So it's been a minute since I had it, but I think the big issue is that I think there's going to be for these breweries the need to expand further. And as breweries get into food, I think we're going to see a lot of breweries self-implode because the food game is extremely hard. Not just the fact that you originally, like with brewing, like you have to deal with in Michigan, like the Department of Agriculture. Whereas when you add food, then you have the, you know, health, different health codes, FDA, all these different things that get added to your limitations. So I think a lot of breweries that are going to try to save their business may get into food and may, you know, expire. But I also think trying to do everything is going to hurt a lot of breweries as well. You do not have to be a distillery, brewery, winery, cidery, meadery. Like, you can survive being just a brewery. You can survive buying in bond whiskey or wine if you want to just offer it to your customers so that you have it available, especially when it comes to stuff like spirits, because spirits have a long shelf life versus your other drinks. But in the same token, if you have spirits, then are you spirits only? Are you going to do mixers? Are you going to do cocktails? God, I've had awful cocktails. Like, are you going to ruin, you know, cocktails when customers come? And on top of all that, like all these added things, you only have so much space in the first place. And are you cannibalizing your beer for other products? Or are you getting more customers in because you have those other products? And while it's important that we have it, say, on the Michigan Brewery Map app, when you download that, you could search for breweries that have all these different options, like the ability to find breweries that serve food or breweries that are dog friendly. I think you're going to just, you have to stay in your lane if you're going to want to survive. I think my prediction for you is that these businesses are going to do it. And I think the best thing to do is to not do it.
I think some of those hybrid ones that work too are like, okay, so I'm thinking of a few tap rooms that have like bottled wine and stuff, you know, simple to serve, simple to sell, not mixed with anything, maybe mixed with if they're using syrups in their beer or something and people want to do that with their wines, I'm sure they'll be happy to entertain that sort of thing. But then they'll have the food trucks, and the food truck, I think, is a good compromise. I don't know what it does with legalities and such in Indiana, but yeah.
And food trucks are so hot right now, no matter where they are. Like, everybody's into it.
Yeah. I'm thinking more in Indiana. I feel like the law has changed, but I don't know for sure. There was a legally minimum required menu, which is a really funny thing to Google, the Indiana legally required menu. Like, there's a lot of very classic ones out on the internet for people who knew about this silly law. I think Sun King had Oh, because the legally required stuff, one of it was that you had to offer a glass of milk or something like that. And I think they had dehydrated milk and they would rehydrate it for you. Like they had powdered milk and they would rehydrate it for you, something like that. And they had like a Pop-Tart or something that was super high priced because they really didn't want to get rid of it because then it would be off the menu. That, you know, that type of thing. So anyway, that law I'm pretty sure has changed, but I don't know if the other laws around the difference between a tap room versus a restaurant change when they have a food truck. I really doubt that it does. I think that they are still a tap room. They just happen to have people bringing food inside.
I'm reading up on this because I had never heard of a minimum food service is a legally required menu. And it's like you need hot soups, sandwiches, coffee, milk, and soft drinks. Wow, that is a lot of weird red tape. So an establishment that sells liquor by the drink must also serve food. So that's specifically for Albany, Indiana. So it might be different per maybe each city or each area might have its own version of the legally required menu.
Yeah, it was a statewide thing at one point. And maybe now it's not. I don't know.
I remember seeing like a bologna sandwich for like $800 or something like that on a menu somewhere. I can't remember where it was though.
So, yeah. So I get it a little bit more now that I'm finding this stuff, but it says, I feel like we've talked about this on the show before, just because I feel like I've seen this specific graphic that I'm about to show on the screen itself, but there is pocket O provisions, might be a hot pocket, might be a snake. And then it says it's not a snake. There's also another one, soup flavored soup.
Yeah, this is the Sun King one. Yeah.
This is from Sun King.
Yeah.
So we probably talked about this because this is from Sun King. Yeah, this is rehydrated condensed milk. We combine milk powder with water. So they have to serve it, but it looks, I see, so they made the prices so expensive that nobody was going to buy it, minus maybe the coffee.
Yes. Yeah, and they might have actually served the coffee. Yeah, it was Hubbard and Craven's Coffee, which is one of our local roasteries. They do a really good job, and there's a lot of coffee-infused beers around here that use theirs.
That this is just crazy to see here. The like, obviously everything gets put into the microwave. So obviously they're just trying to like skirt the laws, which is fine by me because that law is dumb. But any brewery that wants to like serve food, like the food truck game is definitely good. The problem is that when you're dealing with food trucks, there becomes a lot of issues with it being a food truck, it showing up late or not at all, it canceling on you like last minute because of weather. Like, you know, your kitchen is, you know, dependent on if the snowstorm gets there early enough or too late. What are some other? Oh, go on, Wendy.
Well, I was just going to say the one thing I like about food trucks is that it gives you a variety. But then on the flip side, it also annoys me when the menu changes all the time somewhere and I never know if the sandwich that I really like is going to be available. So I guess I'm one of those people that you just can't please me.
Metazoa for some time had a permanent food truck. I think it's since changed. I don't know the whole story there. I don't get down there as much as I used to, but it was a pretty good barbecue truck that just lived on their parking lot. Like that's where it was. But it wasn't part of Metazoa. It was just their food truck.
Townies in Ann Arbor, which recently closed, had the exact same thing where they had a food truck on site, where they serve food. But you know, Wendy, and just like beer, you could just get a different sandwich. Just try all different sandwiches. All the time.
Sandwich taster flight.
Is sandwich taster
flight. I do. A sandwich flight. We should talk about that.
What else is going on, Rob, for that article?
Right. So the second thing on the list, I'm kind of excited to see if this one happens. It would be great. But breweries get more creative with festivals and events. And so that could be as simple as release parties, right? If more breweries, even small release parties, they don't have to have lines with, you know, their patio being full of a graveyard or anything like that. It could just be, hey, we're opening at this time. We're tapping this, you know, exciting keg. Doesn't even have to be barrel aged every time. It could just be, it's the first time we've ever brewed this style of beer, or, you know, we're celebrating somebody got home from school successfully today, whatever. And just tap a big old keg, but have everybody out there and, you know, just a party. That it could be as simple as that, or it could be like a real festival, you know, with a tent out in the parking lot or what have you. Do like 450 North does and have the big old pumpkin maze festival. That thing looks like a lot of fun.
I would love a lot more beer events than I mean, there's plenty out there. There's not really too much around here, but not even necessarily beer releases, but just, you know, throw a party. Give me a reason to go out and, you know, hang out, have fun, and drink beer in a plastic cup outside and listen to some random band cover the Presidents of the United States of America. For like, yes.
He's got a very specific picture in mind, I'm sensing.
A buddy of mine, he's got, I call it Millennial Dad Rock Jam Band. And these are the bands that they currently like cover a lot of, which is like Red Hot Chili Peppers, Tool, like that early 90s, mid 90s type music. And I got them to finally, I said, you know, you should, because they do multiple sets. I'm like, at the end of a set, you should do Peaches, because Peaches is a fun song that I think everyone gets into. And they finally did it. So, yeah, that was the, I had a very specific group in mind for that. But yeah, they don't do like 80s rock or modern rock or anything like that. It's just like weird. I say millennial jam rock or millennial yacht rock. For the style of music that they play.
Yeah, I can see that.
Well, I am personally in full support of more events happening at breweries that are just weird and fun. And I'll be honest, my volunteer days are kind of behind me. So if any of the breweries out here need help doing that, I kind of have a background in it. So I'd be more than willing to help hook you up.
Back in the day when cans were still kind of new, Sun King started doing a can invitational because they were doing cans. And so it was a beer fest, and breweries that canned their beers were invited to participate. So that was kind of neat. And then Upland has a Sour and Wild Funk Festival that I still haven't made it to, and I really want to, although Acid Reflux might not want me to.
I've been to that one.
Oh, have you? I think it would be a lot of fun. I have a glass from it that I fell into through a series of events.
That's where I learned about Taxman.
Oh, excellent. Yeah, they have some good sours.
Yeah, very good. That was an interesting festival. We were walking around with Tums and Gas X in baggies, though, because that is a long day drinking sours.
That's kind of been my impression of it, yeah.
I'm guessing that's what you'd have to do for Nucleate up here in Ann Arbor.
For sure. Or about, what's that, Swansea Day? I would love to do something like that. That would be awesome.
Yeah, I think all that's fun. I get acid reflux just thinking about it, but it might be worth it. The next item on the list is more brewers pursuing non-alcoholic and mindful drinking options. The non-alcoholic is kind of obvious. The mindful drinking had to do with things like supporting diversity. So diversity focused breweries. One of the examples here was a, what was it? I didn't find it right away, but it was a beer aimed at Indian Americans, and it had more flavors from like India in it. So things like that. So that's, you know, one example of diversity. The non-alcoholic trend, I think we've been seeing, and we'll continue to see. So I don't think that's too surprising. But I did notice like hop water was called out a few times, not just the brand, but the other ones, like the idea of it, just hop infused water.
What do you
the
think?
The smaller sizes too. I thought that was, I think that's interesting because a lot of them, some of them are switching over to those, what, the 19.2 ounce cans. So instead of getting a four pack or a bomber, I'm now going to get the 19.2 ounce cans, which to me is kind of counterproductive, but I guess I get it. When I was at the store today, I saw two guys come in looking for Voodoo Ranger varieties in the big cans. So they're selling, they're working out. They were very specific in that when they didn't have the flavor they wanted in the big cans, they looked at the six packs and were like, no, we'll come back next week.
They know that they could combine a couple cans and get there.
Yes. I'm not sure. I thought it was funny. I'm like, I can show you something else to try because they had they were looking for IPAs specifically, and they had all the Bell's ones are in the 19.2 ounce cans now too. So they could have had like three different two-hearted flavors.
Oh, go on, Rob.
Well, I was trying to remember, I think it was the Frogicloss. Yeah. From Hop and Frog. It was the first time I encountered the 8 ounce cans, less than 8.5, 8.45 ounce cans. And that one's a 13% beer, so it makes a lot of sense to have such a small can of it. Kind of perfect. But that was the first time I ran into those little guys, and I kind of like them.
Better on Draft is made possible thanks to our sponsor, North Center Brewing in Northville, Michigan. Open Tuesday to Sunday, North Center provides a fun atmosphere with amazing beer. Try their Bobby English while playing shuffleboard or wash down their classic Reuben sandwich with a glass of painkiller. Find them online at northcenterbrewing.com. Better on Draft is sponsored by Zatuna Liquor. Located on Rochester Road in Rochester Hills, go visit Jack and see why he is known as one of the best beer and bourbon stores in the state. A large variety of singles, wine, booze, and snacks, Zatuna Liquor is your one-stop shop before a party. Better on Draft is sponsored by Craft Tapped. Currently located in 11 states, including Michigan, Wisconsin, and Minnesota, Craft Tapped is a monthly subscription that pays for itself after just one visit to your local brewery. Use the code BOD at checkout and receive 15% to any membership, not just for Michigan fans. For Michigan fans, get 50% off your first two pints at each venue you go to, including Better on Draft sponsored North Center Brewing and 2022 March Draftness winner Copper Hop in St. Clair Shores.
We've been advocating for those 8 ounce cans, like the Red Bull skinny cans, for a lot of these high octane ABV beers for the long time. Like, God, I would probably buy more Griffin Claws Flying Buffalo or other beers that typically come in cans if they came in a easier to drink where I don't have to open up a 16 ounce bottle. Like, the thing that I dread the most, I don't know if it feels the same way to you guys, but when I get to a beer where I know I'm only going to have one beer, but I'm at home drinking by myself, like, I feel kind of bad. Like, oh, I'm only going to have, and it, what's crazy is I could drink a six pack of Bell's Amber and not feel the exact same way as I am a 22 ounce of Bourbon County. Like, it's all mental. But in my mind, like, I don't want to crack open that because I know that's the only beer I'm going to have. That's only 22 ounces I'm going to have. So I need to make it last the night, or I need to make it last for the time, because I can't be hung over the next morning at, 7 a.m. or 8 a.m., whatever time I get up to move through the day. Wendy, you're smirking at me.
So my problem with that is when I drink one of those, I get just enough of a buzz that I want another beer. So now I'm arguing with myself that, oh, I could have just one more. I'm at home, not driving, right? So yeah, I totally get what you're saying though. I'd be okay with it.
The reason that I have to open one of those up is because that's the only thing that's left in the house. So another beer would be another one.
Oh, yeah.
And I just can't commit to it anymore. Like, I can't commit to that kind of a beer at home anymore. And I'm not one to, I don't drink really during the week, minus when I'm at bowling, which you get my weekly bowling Miller Lite pitcher at on the Michigan Craft Beer Discord. If you check the show notes, you can go and join the Michigan Craft Beer Discord.
But yeah, during the week I don't drink too much anymore. So I'm pretty much, and that's not even like I drink whiskey or I drink something else. Like I just don't drink. I don't go to the if I'm at a bar, I don't go to a brewery during the week, but like it's soda or water, depending on if I want caffeine or not. Like that's really the only decisions that I make. Going back to the article though, and going back to what like smaller sizes, hop water, like there's some of these things that breweries can do to make NA friendly equivalents. Like here in Michigan, there's a lot of places that carry like Faygo. Like that's kind of the shtick for NA beers, or not NA beers, but NA beverages, is because most of them don't have like a water gun. So they don't have fountain sodas. So everything has to be in a can or a bottle. So Faygo is typically a good spot to have. Hop water obviously costs ingredients. Like you can't just infuse hop water and not, not charge it or not have it cost something. So you have to have something available. But I would love to see in Michigan the removal of NA beer from the beer class. Therefore, other breweries, whether they're a brew pub or not, can just simply carry it for everyone. They can easily, without any red tape, without any bending of laws or fun interpretations of the law, carry NA beer that's not theirs. They can, hell, I don't care if Michigan makes it it has to be a Michigan NA beer. You know what? Great. Let's find a Michigan NA brewery, or, you know, I know Two Roots is gone, but let's find an NA beer that gets made. I think Petoskey makes one that gets distroed, or at least the hop water. But there are ways to get around it to appease the customer that we just need to get rid of government red tape. But at this point, I'm going to be honest with you, and I'll say it loud just because, what the fuck is the Brewers Guild of Michigan doing? Because it feels like they're just not doing much over the last 5 years for Michigan craft beer. I, as the consumer, do not see any benefits that they have made. And I would love to be wrong. I would love to be like, you know what? You don't see it because it's X, Y, and Z. Great. I'll come back on here and I'll put a retraction on the next episode. Please tell me. But it feels like the Brewers Guild lobbies for show, but gets nothing done. And the fact that we have a craft beer fan in Michigan Congress right now, the young lady from Water Lavette that I always forget her name when I want to bring her up. I think it's Rachel. She was on our show. She was a guest. So that makes me even more of an asshole. but again, you have someone in there that is available to lobby, available to bring stuff forward, and you're just not using her. You're not using these people. And these younger people who are in the Michigan State and Michigan House. And I'm sorry, Rob, I know you're Indiana. I'm sure you have plenty of red tape over there too. But at least here in Michigan, like the fact that NA beer is stupid. Like I want to buy Athletic from Athletic Brewing website. I want to buy the stuff that I can't get at the stores here because they don't distro, because they make very small batches of it. They made a goddamn alt beer and I couldn't have it. Like,
oh no,
that do you know how, like, I might quit drinking if you give me an NA all beer? a little bit.
No, but I mean, I understand that you are, that's why I'm laughing so hard.
Like, what if Athletic made an NA triple, like the flavors of a Belgian triple in an NA form?
I would, like, be all over that.
That's the thing, but you're not going to be able to buy it because they're not going to distro it here, and we can't buy it online because it's beer. So that's the thing, that these NAs and mindful drinkings and stuff, like the stuff that we want these bars and breweries to have, they can't do it on their own. They need help, or they need the ability to go out there and, purchase beer to easily be resold. That's,
you make a strong point about NA beer not needing to be covered like alcoholic beer. Like that would open up so much in the tap rooms.
Well, so when the laws in Michigan were created, what was probably the NA players in the world? It was probably the big dogs like O'Douls, Labatt's, AB, Imbev, AB, Coors, Miller were probably your only options. Labatt, maybe here in Michigan, Molson, assuming they have an NA. But now, NA beer is such a huge thing. And when you have brands like Partake and Athletic, that are making amazing beers that I just simply can't get because they're not, well, they're making amazing NA beers, but I can't get them because they're quote unquote beers. That just kind of bothers me. It doesn't seem like it's good marketing. Because if you allow beer shipments into the Michigan, sure, it's going to cut into Michigan sales, but what it's going to do is it's going to allow Michigan breweries to ship beer out. Like, I was talking to a brewery where people have been begging for their beer to get shipped because they're a longtime player in the state. I won't say their name, but it rhymes with Mark Dorse. And they can't ship out, but people want their beers because everyone knows about Plead the Fourth.
Trick or Treat.
They used to ship. I don't know who you're talking about. Right. But again, yeah, like having the ability to ship out beer, people who love Wax Wings, oh my god, just imagine how big Wax Wings could get if you just allowed Wax Wings to ship out of the state.
Oh, I'd love it if they could just ship it to me.
That is the one thing I do miss about the early COVID days was all the beer deliveries from the breweries. That was such a nice thing. But now, you need a distro license to be able to do that. God, I'd get a distro license and just be like, all right, this is where I'm shopping for beer this week. I'm going to be in Traverse City. If you want Traverse City beer, I'm going to pick it all up and then deliver it.
You might have a business model there.
I was just going to say, maybe that's what I need to do.
That's how you visit all the breweries.
That's how you visit all the breweries. That's for sure. So I just cut down the red tape. We're only going to be doing one episode today. No news segment. So we're going to go a little longer today. Just kind of shooting the shit and talking. But we got a few more things that is in that article, Rob.
First, I want to defend the Indiana Brewers Guild and say that I know that they are working for me and have led to some good changes of laws. I don't know if it's good or bad, but for example, we are now allowed to have kids in bars. And whereas we could not before, we instead you'd leave them in the car and go inside and drink. And then later.
Is that what your dad used to tell you? Oh, you can't come in here. Stay in the car. I'll keep the heater on.
You'd think, but no, I grew up in Ohio and kids are allowed to sit at the bar and everything, and parents can buy the kids drink and everything there. Like, Ohio is a civilized state.
Buy your kid pull tabs to keep them occupied.
I'm sorry, that was a louder laugh than I expected it to be.
Number four on the list is that beverage companies ditch carbonation to attract customers. And this one is more aiming at the youngers, apparently. That I guess they don't like the fizzy bubbles. I'm not sure exactly, but that was the prediction that they're making. I don't think it's completely wrong. It's an interesting idea. Hop water could kind of be there, if it's still water. But there's some Twisted Tea, for example. I don't remember if Mike's is carbonated or not. It's been a while since I've had a Mike's.
I'm pretty sure.
In a can.
Yeah, Mike's is carbonated. I think Twisted Tea, it might not be carbonated, but I'm pretty sure Mike's is carbonated. From what I recall, being a 14-year-old drinking it.
I just got some for my daughter when she turned 21. See if she liked any of these things. She didn't. I don't think she ever got to it. So I might still have a Mike's maybe.
We can do science right on air.
I'm sure right. There's enough sugar in it that it'll still taste exactly like it did all the years ago.
Probably.
I mean, being the youngest person here, but is carbonation an X factor for a lot of these breweries? Are places, are people looking for less carbonated beverages? I never thought of that.
I did not either.
Yeah, I was honestly surprised by this one. I had to reread it a couple of times when I first found the article. This one seems like possibly their boldest prediction. Like, I did not realize this was a trend or something people were looking for. I guess it's kind of like cocktails, though. Those don't have to be carbonated, depending what they're mixed, what's mixed in there.
Yeah, I don't know. So I am not usually a fan of the hand pulls and the nitro because it feels like it's flat to me. I don't like it too carbonated, but I like that happy medium in there. So I don't know. Maybe it is an issue.
So I used this website, google.com, and I searched for do younger generations want less carbonation? And it talks about how a lot of the younger generations moving away from alcohol, which I think is part of it. They're moving away from conventional beverages like soda and sugary drinks. So as they continue to move away from that, so I feel like their drink choices are different than carbonated beverages. Therefore, that's why they don't want carbonated beverages. So I don't think it's like, I'm against the carbonation. I think they're just beverage choices are less carbonated beverages in the first place, which in turn is what the article is now saying, is that they're not, it's aiming at the younger people because they just don't want carbonated beverages, not because they're anti-carbonation.
Or they're looking for different beverages than what their parents drink.
Bats McGee and Twitch, somebody put this up there. Was that you, Wendy?
Yeah.
Go on.
I like it. I'm a simple man. I want breweries to have beer. I like it.
I think there's a lot of people who, you know, when they go to a brewery, that's what they want. They know they're going to a brewery, so they know they're going to get beer. That's what they expect to get there. And it's kind of almost like when every comedian has this joke where a person goes to a vegan restaurant and is asking for a cheeseburger. Like, you don't go to a vegan restaurant asking for a cheeseburger. Like, it's just kind of almost like an unwritten rule. But as these breweries become restaurants, become distilleries, getting their winemaking license and adding all these, like, it's almost like it's forced upon them now that they have to carry, they have to have, because you have to appease to this mass spectrum base because you're fighting for the little scraps that are out there right now as there's 400 plus breweries in the state of Michigan. Bill Carney on our Facebook page. Again, you could chat with us just like Bill is doing. Properly carbonated is what he's looking for. There's a certain brewery in Central Michigan that overcarbonates their beer, and I won't buy it because of that. It's too fizzy like a Coke. I think everybody might feel the same way about that. Just kind of like, I don't want to, you don't want to get too full on the gas, too full on the carbonation, and you're like sucking in all this extra filling in your stomach and you're hiccuping and you're belching, and it makes drinking a poor experience.
It's the wrong choice if you're running a beer mile.
It is. We should try again. It's been a few years, but the guy who has ran like the fastest beer mile and constantly broken records, he's just from Windsor. Like, he's right across the river here in Michigan. We've tried to get him into our studio back when we were in Royal Oak a bunch of times. But he talks about, because you have to open the beers too, and they have to be bottles. They have to be 12 ounce. They have to be a certain ABV. Like, there's qualifications for the beer mile. And then after that, it's just kind of like a free game. So you can pick whatever. And he, like, you watch this dude, and the fact that he can run the beer mile that fast, it's just ridiculous. Cause he does it in like 4:20, like 4 minutes, 20 seconds, a beer mile.
How many beers does he have to drink?
Four.
Four in a mile?
Yeah. So he drinks four beers in 4 minutes. Four 12-ounce beers in 4 minutes, plus runs a mile. So you start the entire... You
can't decarb them to begin with either.
Yeah, you can't decarb them. They're bottled and they're capped as you go pick them up. So you start by chugging, running a quarter mile. You have to grab your beer, pop it open, chug, and you have like, you can start like run jogging while you're drinking. And you have like an area, like maybe a 16th of a mile that you can like kind of like continue to move forward while you drink the beer, and then you go run a quarter mile and you do that three more times.
I don't know what the spill limit is on it either, but
I've watched video, because again, the video is less than 5 minutes, and I don't think I recall the guy actually spilling any beer. Like the beer miles are.
Would he be disqualified if he wore his beer instead of drank it?
Oh, I'm sure he would.
Oh yeah.
But I'm sure that probably slow him down. I'm sure that like spillage right. Probably is the issue is probably not finishing the beer. That's probably the biggest thing, is you prematurely toss it away because the beer, as you're trying to chug it, is smacking down and up, and it's getting all this foam inside the bottle, and you're like, is that too much beer?
Do they get to pick which beer they chug?
Yes.
Or is it something that's given to them?
They get to pick which beer they chug, but it has to follow the bottle rule. So it has to be a bottle, a 12-ounce bottle. It has to have a specific ABV minimum. There might be other rules too, but those are the two biggest ones that always come to mind.
So Dragon's Milk is not too carbonated. That might work.
Oh my God.
Poor Dragon's Milk. Jesus.
That's how they come.
I wouldn't be able to finish now. Running. I'd chug it and just be like plop. By the second one, at least I could probably.
It's going to take more than 5 minutes for it to take effect.
I don't
think I can do a mile in 5 minutes though.
I've done chug challenges at a Facebook group that I'm a part of. So I definitely will pick the beers that I'm using for the challenge based on the carbonation mm-hmm. involved. Like the Blapple, the Busch Light Apple beer, too much carbonation. I can't chug that. I can't even chug 8 ounces of that. It is halfway through. I'm ready to spit it everywhere. Yeah. So I don't know if I could do this beer mile.
This Bavarian Princess is quite carbonated. It would not be a good choice. And it's in a can, so it doesn't count. It's easier to shotgun a can.
Right? For those of you that are listening, go follow us on Twitch. If you do, just like CapriSun98 did, we appreciate that. Give us a like, give us a follow. Everything like that helps us. That's free to you to like, follow, and subscribe on all of our social medias, and it helps us immensely. I want to know what you guys think. So for me, I think I could do a beer mile in, I would say, 13 minutes. And that's because I'm not fast in the first place. So I doubt I could run a mile in sub 10 regular. So I think I could do 13 minutes, but the beer choice, honestly, like if it's allowed, I would do Guinness. Like that would be my probably beer choice, would be Guinness, just because I can slam. But again, whether it's the nitrogen or the fact that the bottle isn't 12 ounces, both of those probably break. But what time do you think you could do a beer mile?
So I am a runner. I know I could do a mile in, well, I know I can do a mile in 8:30. I've done that multiple times. These days I'm in the nines, low nines. So I know I can do that, but the drinking part is the wild card there. What would I don't know what I would pick still. I've been thinking through that. I have no idea what I would pick yet.
Yeah. So here is that, so somebody in here, there's people that are drinking. Let me actually get the screen share. Oh, that's the camera. Let's go to the screen share.
I feel like I have a couple of friends that could actually really exceed at this event. If they only knew about it, I might send them that video.
I mean, I think the goal is to get under 5 minutes. I think that's what a lot of people want as like personal goals for the competition. Like that's, you know, you might not be able to beat Corey Bellamore, but oh, can you mute the video? I didn't know the video was on audio. It's muted on. It's muted on my screen. So who knows? I'm sorry, guys. We might have to cut that in post if anything bad was said or anything like that.
I didn't hear anything.
No, there wasn't anything bad.
Oh, God damn it. Y'all, it was just loud.
Yeah.
Oh, the video was loud. Okay. I don't know why. Like, the tab was muted, so who knows?
I don't know.
Anyways.
Yeah.
Anyways. So that's the beer mile. What else do you have for this right. article, Rob?
Number five was one that I'm pretty sure we brought up last week, and I think is a really good one. Breweries will consolidate to share resources and survive. And that means more than just buying each other up, although that's on this list. But it also involved sharing equipment or using equipment or, you know, basically contract brewing or something similar to get, you know, get the kegs in your tap rooms that you can sell your beer. But maybe you don't have to have the equipment.
I mean, I've always been a proponent of like, you don't want dead space, dead air, dead tanks. Like you want to be able to brew. So I think like, I don't know what the laws are for contract brewing, but being able to brew or contract brew, or even if a brewery wants to open and just contract somewhere else, they don't brew on site, but they just, you know, they're a brew pub. So they bring in all their own beer.
Yeah, or maybe, you know, they brew test batches and contract out the big batches.
Yeah, I think there's definitely a lot of space in the state of Michigan for breweries to be able to combine, collaborate, and work well together. That's one of the many things. There's, you know, there's a lot of breweries that have a lot of space because they're not brewing as much as they used to, like Dark Horse. Like, I'm sure Brew Detroit still has plenty of space because they're a contract brewery. So they probably have plenty of space to be able to contract out. Same with Dragon Mead. Like, they got two facilities now. They could probably contract out. I don't know if Kunin brews at both places, but I know Kunin ain't making the same amount of beer that they used to make. So they could, you know, contract out and keep the space going. And not only does it make them money, Kunin, but it probably saves money elsewhere of upkeep and utilizing your own equipment to be able to brew your beer somewhere else. But again, then you have to buy the beer and therefore you have to be a brew pub and you have to follow brew pub laws, which hinder a lot of other things. So,
yeah, I think that the location is going to determine a lot of that. Like if you've contract brewed it, is it your beer or do you have to buy it through a distributor? How does that work?
Oh God. Yeah. If you got to buy through a distributor, cause they probably have a deal. So you have to buy your own beer through a distributor and now you're losing all that extra income. Cause you have to not only pay to get a contract brewed, but then you have to pay to buy your own beer from the from the distributor. Oh no. Oh no. You threw a wrench into everything.
One of my favorite things when Brew Detroit first opened was that they used to sell their low pours. So you used to be able to buy whichever beer that they were making. If it was a low pour and they couldn't sell it, they would sell it to you for a cheaper price. So I always thought that was awesome because I'd just be like, okay, I'll take 3/4 of a can for $2.
That was a long time ago. Did you know what beer it was or was it a mystery beer?
No, you knew what beer it was.
They didn't do the Dum Dums mystery flavor thing.
The mystery thing would have been awesome, though.
Just whatever the next batch that they're going to be bottling or canning or whatever, they just start pouring that one in that can. You get a mix.
Doesn't the bowling warehouse have a machine? They have
a machine
that you can press and it gives you a mystery beer.
Yeah, a soda machine that basically you put your money in, you buy the beer, and it's a mystery beer, and you don't know what it is or what might come out. I was just curious, like, you know, could it be depth or could it be, you know, a Malort barrel aged sour or something? Like, you never know what could come out if it was just randomized.
Well, this beer. Was the very early days of Brew Detroit that they were doing that. So it was a lot of the, I think they were brewing Atwater then. They had just started brewing Bad.
Not Breaking Bad?
No, the what's his name's beer.
No, they were brewing Bad.
The Kid Rock's beer.
Oh, Badass.
Badass. That's it.
I thought you were talking Bad like out of Lowell, Michigan, because there's Bad Brewing out of. No. I don't think it's Lowell. It might be a different city, but it is out of Michigan. We do have a Bad Brewing that has a yellow smiley face as their logo. They're about to celebrate an anniversary, too, which I've heard a lot of positive things about their anniversary party. So if you're in the area, I think it's nearer or off 127. Go check it out for sure.
I've always enjoyed their beer, so you should definitely try them out.
That is one of the few breweries I've been to this year. We went to a Mason, Bats McGee says, that's correct?
It, yeah.
We went to a place that was doing a closeout sale on plants that was a little bit north of it. And I'm like, well, if we're going to go up here, I get to choose where we go for lunch. So I chose Bad Brewing, which was a neat little spot to go to for sure. So thank you, Bats. Go on, Wendy.
That's my trick. Yeah, I'll go with you. If I can pick where we eat and then I pick a brewery so that I can have beer.
But and that's why people keep inviting you.
But see, that's the thing, though, is that for the most part, brewery food game is so on point. And it's one of those places where like it's typically priced a little higher than normal versus other places, but the beer, the food is just typically so good that nobody really bats an eye when you suggest a brewery for a food spot.
So I know this is kind of a little off topic, but when I was in Alabama, I did that to my family a couple of times. We're out and I'm like, oh, hey, let's go for lunch. There's this brewery down the road. And the first time it was great. We all had hamburgers. It was fantastic. The next time we did it, I thought that there was like sandwiches, but they just had different styles of hot dogs.
Okay.
Hot dogs or sandwiches. But
the food was really good. I'm not going to lie. It was an amazing hot dog that I had. I had a hot dog with pimento cheese. I was down south. That's all I have to say. But when it came time for dinner, my mom was like, can we please go someplace that's not a brewery?
Julia has said that to me before. There's two places here in Ann Arbor that I tell people all the time, like if you can get to Blue Tractor during their happy hour, you can eat amazing food, drink really fucking good beer for dirt cheap. And when I say dirt cheap, I mean like you're getting like $3 to $4 pints because it's happy hour, and you're getting like $5 appetizers of barbecue food. So you're getting like burnt ends, you're getting really good food. So like the happy hour, but there is, which is really overpriced, Beer Camp over in Ann Arbor, over by the hockey stadium, I believe over there. And that place is just like Wendy had with the hot dog place. This is a sausage place, sausage, cheese curds. Like they have a lot of to-go food, but like their food there is all, you know, hot food is all sausage. It's so fucking good. When people are coming into town or something like that, especially because it's only like 2 miles off 94. It's an easy suggestion to be like, you know, hey, oh, you're heading to Kalamazoo. Stop here for lunch. Oh, you're going all the way to Detroit from Grand Rapids or from Kalamazoo, I should say, or from Chicago. Stop there from lunch. Go on, Rob.
I'm surprised that place with that name exists. Sierra Nevada has a beer camp, and they had that whole beer camp across the U.S. where they did.
So this is breweries. B-I-E-R.
Ah, okay. So that's how, all right.
Beer camp might actually have existed longer than the Sierra Nevada's beer camp.
Possible. Oh, you mean the one in Kalamazoo?
No, this is in Ann Arbor. So I was just saying, cause it's off 94. Gotcha. Butt Bone says amen to brewery food being on point. Breweries have become my family's first pick. I think they typically always have, if they have a full program there, the program is great. But, breweries need to either do it, have food, or not. Like, I don't want your half-assed version of a hot pretzel. Like,
or the legally mandated menu.
Yeah, like I don't want your goddamn hot pretzel. Like, just, you know, either give me salty snacks. So give me regular ass pretzels, like, you know, just stuff you find in a bowl that makes me, you know, all the salt thirsty and want to drink more. Or you give me like the Pop Daddy pretzels or popcorn, or have a full program.
Those,
like,
Pop Daddy pickle pretzels. The dill pickle ones. That's amazing. Sorry, I had to throw that in there.
You're fine.
Like something I want.
You're fine, but, like, you know, popcorn, great, fun. Don't be trying to feed me, you know, something you put in the microwave as food. Like, I just don't want that. Like, just allow me to bring in food or give me salty snacks. That's my.
I don't know. Kunin's has those little mini pizzas that I think are awesome. It reminds me of being in high school.
I don't want to say that there's a specific brewery I had in mind when I was making my commentary, and that was Kunin, but that was Kunin. When I said, don't give me that fucking big ass pretzel, just give me something salty to snack on.
No, I like the pizza option. The little tiny one does remind me of high school, but
I'm just being a curmudgeon. Rob, there's one more, I think.
There is one more. Oh, yes. Brand value is becoming a selling point. This is such marketing. But yeah, it is differentiating by defining your brand, getting your brand out there. I thought it was interesting. They talked about 10 Barrel as one of theirs. And so I guess 10 Barrel is they're far enough away. I've only been there once. I don't know anything about them or what their vibe would be or what their brand means really at this point. But they were listed and they're one I've been to. Allagash was one that was brought up, and that theirs brand is Maine.
The Allagash Brewery is a great place to go, but it's hard for me to not say that they are not a benefactor of where they are in Portland, Maine. The reason I say that is that if you go to Allagash, there's a brewery within like a 10-step walking distance. And then there is like this shared working space, which has two or three more breweries and a distillery. So having something that close to where you can just take an Uber into the spot, hit up six spots, and then take an Uber out, very, very beneficial. But the Allagash Beer Garden is beautiful. They might be a place that they have a food truck that is permanently there. From what I recall, there was at least a food truck there. I'm pretty sure it was on like bricks, like it wasn't going anywhere. So I don't think the visualization was there. You understood what I said?
Yeah.
There were no wheels anymore. So yeah. So like, I think Allagash gets that. I think a lot of places have that beneficiary. Like if you go to Grand Rapids, you go to Asheville, you go to these places. So having a brand value being your selling point, I more see Loaded Dice. Loaded Dice is a brand value. It is a brand about gambling and beer. All the beer is kind of about, it's a little, I want to say like, It's very men specific, men focused, even though one of the owners is a woman, but like you got a lot of references to 69. You get a lot of references to Hugh Hefner. You get a lot of references to gamble. So it's definitely has the right marketplace for their brand identity. Whereas there are some breweries that, you know, don't really have anything. Like Arctic Circle has brand identity, but it's different. Sherwood, what's Sherwood? Like that's not really too much. Kunin, what's a Kunin? Dragon Mead, what's a Dragon Mead? Like there are places that I think you can lean into, whereas some of these, I don't think you can. And I don't think it's going to help them a lot in the future.
I'd say Jolly Pumpkin falls into a brand. They've got a pretty strong game going.
Well, Jolly Pumpkin leans into Ron Jeffrey's ability to make the world's best sours. I don't think you could open Jolly Pumpkin in 2024. I don't think you can have a new sour kit on the block that does only sours, has the distribution footprint that they have in 2024. Plus, what's a Jolly Pumpkin?
I would call it a sour house.
Everybody knows that though.
If you're an alien and I had said, here's a Jolly Pumpkin, you're going to be like, what's a Jolly Pumpkin?
It's not so much on their name, but if you know Jolly Pumpkin, when you've had a Jolly Pumpkin beer, if you liked it, you know you're going to like another one.
But so they're leaning into what they do, which is good, which is fine, but there's no brand identity until you understand the brand, and then you get the brand identity. Whereas if I tell you Loaded Dice Brewery, you're going to at least understand, oh, it's gambling themed. It's a brewery because it's in the name. What's North Center Brewing? Like, you don't know anything about it other than it's on North Center Road in Northville, Michigan, just south of Baseline Road.
Just thought it was the north part of the center of something.
Yeah. So like there's some breweries that are able to do it, and you know, you can't just go change the name of your brewery. So North Center leads into just the different things that it does, but having that like beer identity, brewery identity, you know, when you think 10 barrel, like when I think barrel, I don't think barrel of beer. I think whiskey. I think, you know, spirits.
When I hear 10 barrel, I think that they're brewing small batches, 20 keg batches of beer.
Is that what it means?
Yeah. I don't think the brand identity focuses so much on what the name is. It's on how they present that brand out across their organization. I think that's what, Rob's point was with the Jolly Pumpkin. Yeah. Is that
you're going to see those beautiful bombers.
If you are familiar with Jolly Pumpkin, you know what they are. If you've never heard of Jolly Pumpkin, you might have to be introduced to it. But if you didn't know what Nike was, you wouldn't know what it was just by looking at Nike.
I mean, that's fair, but I'm looking at the article, which of course, if you're listening live, check out the show notes after the show. But it talks about like, there's a brewery called Love City Brewing, which is in Philadelphia, which is the city of brotherly love. Like there comes a point in time where like you only have a certain amount of time to make your mark. And if you don't make your mark, you don't make your stand with what your product is, what you're presenting to the world as a whole, you're gonna lose it. So breweries that are named after, like Sherwood's named after the owner's last name, so like that's what we know. Like Kunin, same thing. Kunin is the last name of the owner. But when you get to breweries, like, you have one shot to sell yourself, and you can't come in there with a shitty name that doesn't make any sense. But there, here we go. Here, that's, I was trying to figure out the name of it, and of course I lost it. Brand value. So when people talk about Bell's, do you know Bell's or do you know Two Hearted? Like the beer brand Two Hearted has kind of eclipsed what Bell's is. Therefore, you now have Dark Hearted, Light Hearted, Double Two Hearted, Double Black, Double XYZ Two Hearted. It's the same with Voodoo Ranger. Voodoo Ranger became the brand of New Belgium that everything's just Voodoo Ranger now, even though I still call it Fat Tire too many times. But Voodoo Ranger is their brand. So they lean into Voodoo Ranger. Bells leans into Oberon. Founders probably leaned into something and whatever. That's who they are. So brand awareness is going to be key, but if your brand name doesn't make any sense, people are going to be like, what is it? That's just my thoughts. You could disagree with me. I don't care. I'm typically wrong in this show.
No, I don't think you're completely wrong. I think that some of it is, it's some of it is the slant selling too. Like Taxman, they have a lot of tax and similar themed names, for example, but all of their cans have their symbol on the front. Well, almost all. There's the expat ones that don't. So if you liked a Taxman that because you bought the 401 cake because it's got a funny name and you're an accountant, then you will see another beer with a very similar label on the shelf, and you might pick that up next time.
And everything I've had from them, I've liked. So, Muttbone says Dragon's Milk is another beer that became their own brand. 100% true. I was talking about Dragon Mead today, one of my favorite beers, Final Absolution, and I almost called them Dragon's Milk instead of Dragon Mead. And I think that Dragon Mead does have a very solid brand because they've got that whole Knights thing going on, and a lot of their beers are named after stuff like that. So I do think they have a very solid brand, but that kind of eclipses that every time in my mind.
Well, you know, prior to the craft beer boom, there's probably a lot of people that used to call Dragon Mead Final Absolution. Like the brewery itself was named Final Absolution just because that was the name of the beer that everybody drank, that everybody knew, the beer that got distroed. So again, like you don't like the brand is important, but you need to be able to build around that brand, which I think is what the article is saying, to be their big selling point. So that is going to do it better.
We have to talk about the other half thing.
Okay, let's talk about it.
Let's talk about the other half thing.
Talk about the other half thing. Wendy, the floor is yours.
So last week, you can pull the article or the Twitter thing up too if you want. Last week, Rob brought up the other half Destination Brewery in Chicago. And I was scrolling through my Instagram last night, and I saw the Afro Beer Chick, who, if you don't follow her on all the social medias, you should, because she has got amazing content, posted about the fact that she went to the other half opening. And I got to pull it up because it started out, like she said, it was a great place. Prices were kind of high. They wanted $16 for a pint. That is crazy. And then somebody else responded and was like, you know, here in Chicago, we have a lot of really good beer. $16 is a pint for a pint. I don't think you're going to get your neighborhoods to support that. And by the end of the night, other half had responded and they updated their prices. So I just wanted to bring that up. One, because would you pay $16 a pint for a beer?
In Chicago, no.
At a Lions game, maybe.
Yeah.
Like, I don't even think at a Lions game I'd pay $16 for a pint. I'm going to find that's when I go to the cheap beer. Like, I'm not paying $16 for a pint no matter where I'm going. And your destination has to be pretty fucking awesome for me to pay that much. Now, nope, I'm not even going to go there. The other question that I have is, their response to this was pretty quick. Why do you think they started with such a high price point at the opening and then were like, oh no?
Yeah, I wonder if they were trying to see if they could do it. You know, if they had the same cachet in Chicago as they left New York with.
Like, I don't remember paying $16 for a pint in New York either.
No, I think to that me, would stick in crazy. My memory.
Yeah, this is. Yeah, there's plenty of people who are responding, obviously, to Afro Beer Chicks commentary, which came from the other half. But a lot of people saying, you know, this definitely seems a little bit like price gouging, like you're taking advantage of the area that you were. But I think this might be one of them, how the kids say, fucked around and found out, where they tried. And it didn't work. Like, they probably thought they could get people to pay this kind of beer or this kind of money for their beer. And it looks like they realized that they can't, that's for sure. So if they were going from $16 now down to $9, I mean, that's a massive drop. That's almost a 50% drop on your highest priced beer. That's if you were trying to sell it for 16, but you could sell it for $9 and still make money, that's that kind of proves what we all know, is that, you know, inflation isn't necessarily the largest issue with price increases. It's more price, you know, gouging, because you're taking advantage of all the other prices going up.
It could also have been a strategy with the opening, if it was just at the opening that the price was that high, to get people to leave so more people could get in, or something like that too.
I mean, that's not a bad theory.
But wouldn't you want them to come back?
Another day, maybe. But on opening day, maybe you want to get as many people through as possible.
I'm not going back if your beer is $16.
Well,
I'm
not gonna lie. There is that, but now it's not. I mean, now it's $9 because we said it was too high. Where's that guy? The price of this beer is too damn high.
So I would like to say kudos to Afro Beer Chick for calling him out on it. Like, that's important that we do that, that when we see things like that going on, that we say something and are like, hey, this, it might be a nice place to go, but I'm probably not coming back because I can go over here and get very good beer for a much lower price point.
Yep. So it looks like she posted back on just yesterday. So here are the prices of other half in DC. 16 ounces, $8, half liter of their rice lager for $10. Their Bock is $12 for the half liter. That's the most expensive beer they have in DC, is $12 for a half liter of their Bock.
That's got to be a pretty good buck.
Yeah, I mean, that's still what I'm seeing right here, because I was trying to figure out how many ounces in my head was a half liter, and it's 17. So I'm guessing it's a specific glass that they have. But even then, like, that's still $4 cheaper than the price of a pint at Other Half Chicago, that's for sure. The ads here on Twitter or X are really weird now, to say the least. So, yeah, is that it, Wendy? Do you have more?
That was it. I just wanted to bring that up, and because we had talked about it last week, and I was like, $16 for a pint? Are you kidding me? So, and the fact that they were like, nope, and they brought it down because of that post, I think that's awesome.
Here we go. Here is their pricing chart. Their non-alcoholic hazy was $14 a pint. Their regular hazy was $14 a pint. Oh, man, this is definitely a place that I would never go to. IPA, Imperial IPA. The first one was an Imperial. Hazy IPA, Imperial IPA, Lager. IPA, Triple IPA, Imperial IPA, Imperial West Coast IPA, Hazy IPA, IPA, Berliner Weiss, Hazy IPA.
That lager is an IPL.
I'm sure.
Don't test me. but a Mexican lager for $14 for a pint at 5%, that's pricey, that's for sure.
That's a... gotta be a damn good Mexican lager.
That is the power of the people, that's for sure.
Which I just bought a 4-pack of, is it a 4-pack or a 6-pack of a dark Mexican lager from Creature Comforts for like $12 or $13 for the 4-pack. So I'm just saying.
Well, if it's okay with you, Wendy.
We're good now. I just need to get that one in there.
For this extended episode of the Better on Draft podcast. No news this week. We will see you next week. And no matter what you think of your beer, we think it's better on draft. Have a good night.
Cheers.